Hello, and welcome to the Metro West Daily News Podcast, part of the Wicked Local Network. I'm your host, Megan Kelly. I'm the digital editor for the Metro West Daily News, and here with me today are Brad Avery.
Hello.
And Bill Shaner.
It's me.
And on a sad note, we'll come back to this, but today is Brad's last day at the Daily News. He's leaving us. He's going to work for a beverage trade publication.
Yes.
But we will get to that. But first, the election. I know we're all tired still, and it's been an interesting last 36 hours ever since the results came in. But we have a new president-elect Donald Trump. He met with Obama today, or he's meeting with him now. This is about noon on Thursday at the White House. And unsurprisingly, Massachusetts went in the other direction, voting for Hillary Clinton. And again, unsurprisingly, most of the towns in the Metro West region voted for Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump, some by quite a large margin. For example, in Sudbury, 7,257 voted for Clinton, whereas 2,479 voted for Trump. Weston, 4,301 voted for Hillary Clinton, 1,642 voted for Trump. Framingham, 20,277 voted for Clinton, and 7,031 voted for Trump. And I'll get to Milford. Milford, 7,325 voted for Clinton, and Trump, it was 5,231. The only two towns in our coverage area, and this is, they're both in the Milford area, that voted for Trump were Bellingham, where he won just over 4,000 votes over Clinton's, also just over 4,000 votes. It was 4,056 to 4,027.
Ooh.
And Mendon, which where it was 1,694 over Clinton's 1,528. So
that's close. Both close. But
they're both close.
It's going to be interesting moving forward. I was in Boston on Tuesday night for the Yes on 4 celebration party, and I do have some audio from that we can loop in in a little bit. But I, you know, it was interesting, and I tweeted that I want to get home before the riots start, and it wasn't really a joke. Like, I saw that happening, and like,
yeah,
something's gonna happen. So nothing happened on Tuesday night, but last night there were massive protests in Boston, and especially in New York, where they shut down Midtown Manhattan at like rush hour,
but it sounds like
people are flocking to the streets.
They were all peaceful.
It was all peaceful.
Yeah, I mean,
I was a little worried about, you know, violence breaking out, but so far all the protests have been very peaceful. And I think what you know, I've seen some people on Twitter or just, you know, retweets, things like that, where people are saying, you know, you gotta respect President Trump and did they protest when Obama was elected? And the answer is yes. The Tea Party formed almost immediately after Obama was formed. So I think we're going to see just a repeat in reverse, and or the inverse of what we had right after Obama was elected with the Tea Party. And now it's going to be coming from the left, and you know, we'll see how things pan out there.
And I mean, that kind of language to say get over it or stop whining is really unfortunate, because I feel like even if, say, if Hillary Clinton had won, you know, I would expect Trump supporters to be pretty down this week, and I wouldn't tell them to stop whining, and I wouldn't say like, oh, you know, buck up, this is your president now. I mean, hey, people on both sides were very passionate about this, and I think that in all these kinds of elections, no matter who the loser is, that their supporters should be given the space to mourn and wonder what went wrong. I mean, this is on both sides of the aisle. I think that's fair. I think that it's kind of mean-spirited to say, oh, you know, get over it, this is your president now. I mean, no one's not...
been the case ever, that every election people do that. And, you know, the left is not absolved from having pulled this same type of attitude. But every election this happens, and it's totally fair and it's totally legitimate to respond this way. And just to say, don't spray paint swastikas on walls around the country, which is something I'm seeing from, you know, Trump supporters. That's the disturbing thing. Regardless of President Trump or President Clinton or whoever, I don't like seeing these reports of vandalism, of violence that is already kind of attacking minorities, of reports, you know, that's not what this future needs to be about. And I think that, you know, when Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama went out yesterday and they said, you know, we need to have an open mind and work with President Trump, what they're doing is they're saying, let's keep the peace and let's move forward and go ahead and, you know, work together for unity, because despite all the rhetoric in this election, you know, do we want to, you know, let ourselves, you know, be torn apart by these political differences, or do we want to put constructive political action into place on both sides of the aisle? You know, we can have an opposition party without, you know, resorting to, you know...
Without resorting to the lowest common denominator.
Exactly.
I mean, you can have... There's ways to have intellectual disagreements without resorting to name-calling, you know, anti-Semitism or homophobia or whatever, you know, whatever the personal insults, I would say. It's, you know, it's not really fair to say to someone, well, you're this, so you automatically are disqualified from having an opinion.
Right.
You know, and one of the things that is important about living in a stable democracy is the peaceful transfer of power. And I think that both Obama and Clinton are
I caught Obama's speech yesterday.
Very much in favor of that.
It was mature. Yeah. The peaceful transition of power and respecting the office of the president more than your political ideology,
right,
something that should be held above who you are, is, I think Obama handled that very delicately and tactfully on Wednesday afternoon.
So I think, you know, as we see more protests moving forward against Trump, I think it's going to be difficult because you can't, you know... Saying this on a podcast, you can't account for, you know, large groups of people in a single place. But if they remain the way they've been going, which is peaceful, and, you know, who cares if people are swearing or whatever? People are angry. They're allowed to be angry, you know. But so long as there's no violence breaking out at these protests, so long as police handle it properly and, you know, don't, you know, there's no inciting of violence on whatever end of the aisle, whoever, you know, is passing by, then this is a good thing, I think, to see, you know, a response. And it's a good thing to see Trump supporters celebrating, as they should be celebrating, because, you know, there's a chance for, you know, the change that they want to see. So in this sort of, you know, coming in the middle of the aisle, let's not say that anyone's response is illegitimate.
Right. So, I think that we need to give people who are upset about this need to take a week, 2 weeks, however long, to really let it soak in. And I was out and talking to voters yesterday, just doing sort of a post-mortem on this, and I had one woman who I just kind of asked her how she felt about the election, and she went off on a pretty big tear. And it was interesting to see just this outpouring of just raw emotion that came from her, just simply prompted by, how do you feel about the election results? And I have audio of that. I'd like to play it now.
I'm shocked at the stupidity of the majority that put in a man who is openly a bigot, a racist, misogynist, sexual predator, a cheat who stiffs workers because he doesn't feel like paying, who's litigious and serves up lawsuits for everyone who crosses his path, who has no self-reflection, no self-humor, no... He's completely unfair in his thinking. And what is amazing is, more startling, is he's very immature, talks like a child, and wants vengeance and retribution from everyone. And he has no knowledge, no basic knowledge in government, laws, and no interest to ever learn. He never, not even the least bit curious. And I have a feeling, less than a few months into this dictatorship that he plans on having, he'll get bored with the actual day-to-day work and pass it off to Pence or his kids, who are so great, great, great.
And I was just like, wow, that was a lot. Really, going out, talking to progressive-leaning people yesterday, I was struck by the anger, the exasperation, and just the feeling of uncertainty at the direction that this country is heading that I haven't experienced from people before. So I think that we do need to allow for some collective mourning among our liberal folk.
Yeah, I mean, after 2000 and 2004, when George W. Bush won both times, you know, people were, well, 2000 was a little different because the results weren't in immediately, so people kind of had time to get used to the idea. But in 2004, you know, people on the left were pretty upset, and they really started trying to get their ground on the game to be a little better. And, you know, people, I don't know, I feel like I can't say whether people now are more or less upset than they were back in 2004. I mean, that was before Facebook and Twitter and all of that. But I will say that I don't really recall, I do recall people in 2004 being upset because so many same-sex marriage bans were put on the ballots that, and a lot of them passed. And a lot of people actually were, I remember people were very disappointed about that. And they felt, a lot of my queer friends felt very persecuted, and, you know, they do today as well. Bill, you also had said before we started recording that you talked to some Trump supporters too, and some of them were quite passionate as well.
Yeah, I talked to Trump supporters who were frankly proud. They had been backing this candidate since day one in an area of the country where it's not necessarily popular to back him, and they were optimistic about the direction the country is heading. I had one guy who literally just said he's excited for America to be great again. So I think that what I saw plays into the larger post-election media narrative of people in our industry missing the story. In a large degree, people in our industry not totally understanding where Trump supporters are coming from. Margaret Sullivan, the public editor for
The Washington Post, right?
The Washington Post.
She used to be at the New York Times.
Yeah, I couldn't remember if it was Post then Times or Times then Post.
She's at the Post now.
But she said that the media, us, pretty much in general, took Trump literally in what he said. Build a wall, deport millions of people. We took him literally, but not seriously. Whereas his supporters took him seriously, but not literally.
I think that's a good point. That's a really good point.
It reminds me is another of the media issues that we have to examine now. This is months ago, and I think it was Libby Watson on Twitter who made a crack about how after some dumb Vox article went up that had nothing to do with anything, it was during the debates, and she just said, all reporters should be required to spend 6 months living and reporting on poverty in rural Mississippi before they're allowed to return to New York City. And I think it speaks to a greater truth in that, and I think what's her name, Mika Brzezinski on Morning Joe made another comment about, you know, how many pundits can you name who, you know, are living out in Trump country right now, which Trump country is these rural areas. And so we've sort of ignored these rural areas and blocked ourselves off from them, and these are the ones that wound up driving this election, that the cities themselves cannot alone, you know, carry the country. And I think that's sort of what the desperation that we miss out on just from, you know, observing big urban media.
Yeah. Well, I think that we should leave it there and move on to the real important issues facing us these days, which are legalized marijuana. but before we touch on that, let's just briefly touch on...
It was so bitter. Hold on. Can I just say that it was such a weird feeling watching the results come in and the Globe calling Massachusetts for Yes on 4. And it was like, woohoo. I was at a bar in Worcester watching the results come in late, and everyone went, oh, yay, and then just went back to being sullen and downtrodden.
You think that's weird. I was in that's the true. Celebration at, party yeah, for at, Yes on yes. 4, and everybody is cheering and flipping out, and I'm kind of looking at the TVs like, do you guys see what's happening on the screen right now? And then
doesn't matter, legal as pot.
But Megan, what were you going
to
say?
So I was going to say, just before we get to question 4, which is ultimately the more interesting one, let's briefly talk about question 2,
right.
The charter school cap raising question. It failed pretty spectacularly across the state.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff that I had been reading about it really kind of pits this as a city versus suburbs thing, or they tried to pit it as a city versus suburbs thing, but... Mm-hmm. It ultimately failed. You know, most of our towns voted against it. Just looking at the numbers here, pretty resoundingly. You know, I think that a lot of people live in Massachusetts specifically because of the schools, and that they have faith in their public school system and they want to make it better rather than add charter schools. So
you got to think, in our towns, 80% of municipal budgets, 70-80% go to the schools.
Oh yeah,
the schools are the biggest thing in the town and most directly affect the most people in town.
Absolutely.
So in public schools, we're resoundingly against the question.
People move to towns, especially in this area,
yeah,
specifically for the schools.
Right.
I mean, I grew up in Medfield, which is just outside of our coverage area, but mm-hmm. my parents specifically moved there for the schools. And then once my youngest sister graduated from college, they were out, or not even before she graduated from college. It was like halfway through her college, they were out of there.
Right, right.
That's really important. That's a good point, that the school budgets are a massive, massive and part of the municipal budget.
I think that the thing about this one, though, is that it's one of those things where, just like question 1, which was about a single casino in Revere, where the entire state's going to decide on this, this is the type of thing where the proponents for question 2, though, made a good point that it's not about these suburban communities that have good schools. It's about... It's about the urban communities in Massachusetts that are much poorer. And I think you're looking at towns like, the poor communities like New Bedford, Lowell, I would take a guess.
Yeah, but all the gateway cities voted against it.
Yeah, oh, they did.
Yeah, no, they didn't like it either.
Yeah, I just think that it's one of those things
where...
Big
part of that budget, too.
In our area of the state that we cover... You know, we have very strong school systems.
Oh, yeah.
And then, again, but we're missing out on some of the more inner city schools that are struggling just like they are in other parts of the country. So I think that's what sort of the idea behind the question was. But you're right. They shot it down as well.
Right.
Didn't matter in the end.
Yeah. So then, anyway, so let's get to legal recreational marijuana. So, Brad, review with us. This actually doesn't go into effect for...
December 15th.
You can start growing stuff, right?
You can possess up to 10 ounces. You can, you know, grow 6 plants per person, up to 12 in a household. So,
two people in a household. When can I go to my local pot shop?
Probably not till 2018 at least. That's the thing, is that you can, on December 15th, you can legally smoke, you know, possess it, so long as you're not doing it in public, as long as you're 21 or older. But we're not going to have dispensaries open to legally purchase it in state for some time, because
January 1st, 2018.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's just an early date. That's an early estimate.
Right, that's not even like a mandatory.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
And
it has to be open by
then. So we have 8 medical dispensaries open right now, but those remain medical. You need a medical card to go in there. Even on December 15th, you can't just walk in anymore and say, oh, marijuana is legal, so I can just buy it.
And can I just say that those... are just opening now?
Yes.
Yeah, no,
after
that was what, like
this
two,
past
2012, right?
Yes, 2012.
Yeah.
So that's
right.
Part of the thing is that
it took 4 years for the dispensaries to get off the ground.
That's a big thing with the question for people, is they don't want to see a repeat of that. They want to try and get it out faster. So they were celebrating Tuesday night, but now they are looking towards the future to say, all right, the fight's not over yet, because this has to be implemented. There's going to be the creation of the Cannabis Control Commission in the treasurer's office. There's going to be a marijuana advisory board. It's 15 members. The legislature is going to have a chance to take a look at this. And, you know, we need to create the proper regulations for, you know, packaging, marketing, advertising, it's got to go before individual town zoning boards and selectmen. There's a lot of paperwork and bureaucracy to now get through to get to open dispensaries.
And so you did a story yesterday talking about that, right? Like what towns voted against it and
yep.
for it and what the next steps are, I think.
And really, you look at the map and almost all of Western Mass approved it. In our area, you know, you see, you know, all the major cities approved it. Boston overwhelmingly voted for it. But you see on the Cape, the North Shore, the South Shore, they shot it down pretty widely with a few exceptions.
Well, they have pretty big drug problems, too.
Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me.
In our area, only a handful of towns rejected it. Hopkinton, Northborough, Southborough, Westborough, Shrewsbury, Sudbury, Weston voted against it. But then the major hubs like Framingham, Marlborough were very largely in favor. Marlborough is a little closer within 800 votes, but Framingham had a good 2,000 vote lead on 54% to 46% voted for it in Framingham. Currently, there are still medical dispensary applications going through. There's about 100 going, or roughly, going through the Department of Public Health at this point, including for dispensaries in Framingham, Southborough. But again, these are medical. So there is.
They can't change.
There's a provision, though, and this is part of what's written into the law in order to force the legislature's hand so we don't have a repeat of this whole medical slow rollout, is that the medical dispensaries that applied for licenses before, I believe it's, I want to say it's October 2015, have kind of first pick that, you know, once this, if they get to this 2018 January 1st deadline, then the medical dispensaries then have opportunity, I believe, and I don't want to go too into detail because I'm a little fuzzy on this, but I believe it's an opportunity to then switch to recreational in order to sort of force this to happen by a certain time so that the state can't drag its feet and try and prolong this as long as possible. They want them to, you know, get going now to start saying, all right, let's get our Cannabis Control Commission together. Let's start saying, all right, here's what you can do for packaging. Here's what you can do for advertising. Get it all done as quickly as possible so we can get these dispensaries open. Otherwise, you know, it's not like you can exactly go to Colorado and transport that marijuana back here.
Right.
So
we're going to have to start growing it, too.
There are those, as we know, on Beacon Hill that would like to see this quagmire, too.
Yes.
So
yeah.
It's going to be an interesting thing to watch. Another really interesting thing for us is, in the law, towns can opt out via a townwide referendum vote.
Yes.
And that's going to be something to watch in the next year then.
I think that definitely. If you're a public official in Hopkinton or Sudbury or mm-hmm. any of these towns where it failed, I think they might be looking for that. And that would be a really contentious, interesting thing to cover.
I think the Hopkinton Board of Selectmen also at some point shot down a medical dispensary.
Right. But you couldn't. I think that actually in that law it said that you couldn't actually specifically reject it. But in this law, it sounds like you can.
Ashland's town meeting, special town meeting at the end of this month, they're going to vote on a recreational marijuana moratorium where they can, I guess through some legal thing, block any dispensary from opening until they pass zoning regulations related to recreational. And I haven't seen any other towns do that. I wonder if any towns will pick up on that.
Yeah.
Because that is kind of a way to circumvent
if it were me, I think I feel like I would want this to be as airtight as possible, but make it, you know, if I were like a town manager or something, make it that, you know, you have to open up in like a place that is like an office park. I mean, you know, somewhere that children cannot have access to, but, you know, make it so that they, like a lot of our towns have like a business district where all the buildings are nondescript and you have no idea what's going on there. And that sounds to me like it would be, and it's far away from residential areas.
Second floor of a downtown would also be good.
Yeah. And like in Hudson right now, there's two dispensaries trying to get in there. One has already received a letter of non-opposition and did so last year and
Has
been medical. These are medical. and has been moving along pretty far, but now a second one is trying to get in, and they're both vying for pretty much the same location right across the street from each other, right off the highway.
Yeah.
Because it's one of the few spaces where you could really get it put, because it's so far away from the downtown.
I was gonna say, like, not on Hudson's downtown with the revitalization. Oh. Maybe they would, you know, there's the microbrewery and the microcreamery. Maybe there would be like a micro... pot dashery or something.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's just another thing that this law allows for, is eventually you could see, you know, pot cafes or like smoke lounges, hookah bar. That the law does allow for that. We need a special license to be approved by the community, the town, or the city. But that is a possibility that could happen at some point.
So interesting that this whole new industry is coming up. I have a friend that works in a medical marijuana grow facility. He just got a job and he like loves it. It's such a weird thing that's now a way that people can be employed in
now,
the state.
Here's another thing right here in Metro West in Natick.
There's the
Northeastern Institute of Cannabis.
Yes.
And what it is actually, it's a trade school. It's not research. It's a trade school for people who want to get involved and get jobs in the marijuana industry, you know, working in a dispensary, working in dispensary management, working in cultivation. They'll teach you all of that. And so they're right there in Natick in like I think it's a tech circle, so it would be like an office park situation. But I think they said they have a roughly 75 students right now and over 200 graduates.
It's a brave new world.
Yeah.
It is a brave new world.
All right, so to wrap this up, I want to cut to Jim Borgasani, who is communications director for the Yes on 4 campaign, and here's a bit from his victory speech on Tuesday night.
It's official! Today, a century-long mistake has been abolished. Abolished by the voters of Massachusetts. Today, voters chose facts over fear.
That's right!
Today, voters chose rational arguments over hysteria. And today, voters chose honesty over alarmist rhetoric.
So now it is our usual Around the Carrig, but today we're going to have a special Brad edition of Around the Carrig.
Roast him.
No.
We're going to put a roasted cup of Brad in the Carrig.
No. I, for one, will miss Brad a lot. Brad, you've been a great reporter. Mm. What I have always appreciated you is your enthusiasm and your, what's the word I'm looking for? Your willingness to try something. You ask lots of questions, but it's good, and your stories are always very interesting and well reported, and I will definitely miss that.
So sad to let go. Founding member of this fledgling podcast team before it
don't,
even gets
don't
off
let
the
it
ground.
Die. Don't let the podcast die.
No.
We're accepting applications for new hosts, but no, it's been great working with you, and I wish you the best at a BevNet.
Yeah, BevNet.
Writing about bevies.
So tell us about BevNet, Brad.
So it's a trade publication in Watertown, and it sort of focuses on the beverage industry. It's been around for about 16 years. It started online, but they moved into print. They have a magazine, too. And it's everything from Coke and Pepsi down to startups with their health drinks and coffee, everything between. Not so much alcohol, but some alcohol. They have a special craft beer publication as well and a organic food publication. And it's business reporting. And I know that the editor told me he used to work here for us years ago before any of us were here. And, you know, so it's just sort of moving on to... You know, somewhere that's kind of a way to focus on, you know, a unique subject matter.
Where in Watertown are their offices?
It's right off, not far off the highway. Where is it? I can't remember exactly.
Is it in Watertown Square?
I think so. I want to say so. I don't want to say for sure, but it's right by the downtown.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, Watertown has some really great diners. I'm sure that your fellow coworkers will show them to you, but... there's a couple on Mount Auburn Street that are great.
Watertown's a cool little place.
Yeah.
Moody Street's the downtown
Moody
street.
Moody Street's in Waltham.
Yeah,
it's my chance to maybe move closer to Boston, which I wanted to do. And, there will be travel. They host conferences and conventions in December. There's going to be in L.A.
Bill, I agree with you. Yeah. Booty Street is pretty cool.
So, that's what I'm doing.
Geographically
and,
challenged.
Yeah.
Watertown and Waltham are the same town in my mind.
The thing is, they're right next to Weston and Wellesley and Wayland.
Too many W's.
So there are a lot of W's. It's like where I grew up in Medfield. There's lots of M's. Medfield, Medway, Millis.
I still am not entirely clear on which Medtown we cover.
Medway.
Yeah, I always confuse it.
Medfield.
Yeah, I'm like, which one's Medway? Which one's Medfield? And
yes. Oh, you realize that if you're right for the craft beer section of BevNet, you'll be directly competing with our beer nut.
Yeah.
Are you even going to wait in those waters, or do you not dare?
I mean, I won't be doing too much on the craft beer side, but maybe occasionally I will, in which case,
game on.
Watch out, Norm.
Game on, Norm. Yeah, you think you're special because you got a beer named after you, which I still have a bottle of that I'm saving for a snowstorm.
Really? I went to Wormtown. Dear listeners, Norm and Miller, our crime and beer reporter, recently had a...
Just the best beat ever.
I know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's insane. He has it unlocked, but he had a beer named after him at Wormtown. It's called The Norm, and there are bottles with his face on it, shirts. I went to Wormtown the other day, and I saw a shirt where it was just his face, and it said Norm under it,
and I almost
bought it.
It is, I think it's like a coconut stout.
It's a chocolate coconut stout.
Yes, so he had been, after they opened, he had been kind of kidding with them, like, you really should have some coconut, you really should have some coconut in your beers, and then, Norm was born.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I know, and there's Norm Day,
celebration
of him.
Yeah, I missed Norm Day.
I know, I did too. I was on my own with my children.
I got
really
there.
I think it was a child-friendly event.
No.
It was packed. It was, their little tap room is very tiny, so it was filled to the brim with people.
Maybe next year. There's always next year.
Yeah. Always next year.
Exactly. So, I'm coming for you, Norm.
Well, all Brad, right. it was great having you on the podcast with us.
It's been really
in the
nice
newsroom.
Working with you.
And wish you the best of luck in the rest
keep
of
touch.
Your endeavors. Yeah, keep in touch.
Thanks for listening. The Metro West Daily News podcast was produced by Megan Kelly, Brad Avery, and Bill Shaner, and it was edited by Bill Shaner. Music was provided by the band Born Without Bones. You can find us online on Twitter. We're at Metro West Daily. And you can also catch up on all of our episodes in iTunes or Stitcher, or go to metrowestdailynews.com/podcast. And if you listen to us on iTunes, we'd really, really love a review and a recommendation. That would be amazing. So thank you.